Oh, yeah. Oh my God, it's falling in. Oh my God, I can't get it out. Oh, I wish I was a conservative woman rather than a liberal woman. If I was a conservative woman, this would never happen. I'd be much, much tighter down there. I'd be so tighter down there that at the extremes, I'd be likely to have vaginismus and be unable to get in at all. Oh, I wish I was a conservative rather than a liberal woman. I can't get it out!
Hello, and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Now,
before we start, I'd just like to say a word about our sponsor, and that is Atlas VPN. Now, here's the situation, chaps. We are all truth seekers here at The Jolly Heretic Public House. We all want to know the truth about the world, and the only way we can do that is if we get lots of different perspectives, lots of alternative perspectives. And we are in a situation where we cannot get that. The internet is censored, everything is censored, and we literally cannot get the other side with regards to certain important events that are happening in the world because of the way that they censor the internet. So the only thing to do, as far as I'm concerned, is to use a VPN. And Atlas VPN is currently running a huge discount. It means you can get a 3-month subscription for just $1.83 a month, plus 3 months for free with a 30-day money-back guarantee. And so time is running out, so it's worth looking into, really. There's lots and lots of benefits to this. Not only is that you've got that deal, but you could unlock your favourite content from all over the world, you know, shows from friends or whatever it is you like or using Atlas VPN. You can keep your Google searches private. They make sure that your results aren't tracked and so forth. You can stop ads and malware. It's more than just a VPN. It blocks malicious links and ads and so forth, and it notifies you when someone's trying to steal your data. And you can save money online. It notifies you of the best deals, and it can protect unlimited devices. So it seems to be a jolly good idea, and as I say, they've currently got this campaign where it's just $1.83 a month. So, you know, it's worth thinking about. $1.83 a month for a 3-year subscription, plus 3 months for free with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Time is running out, so, you know, it's certainly worth looking into. So as a person that is in favour of the truth and wants as much as many different perspectives as possible and is finding these blocked by our current system, I think getting a VPN is worth doing. And as far as I can see, Atlas VPN is where it's at, chaps.
Oh, I've talked a great deal on this show about the maladaptive genetics of being a liberal, that there are problems associated with being a liberal, in particular that liberals are on average higher in physical illness, higher in mental illness, mediated by genetics, higher in all kinds of illnesses, higher in being physically unattractive for genetic reasons, having faces that are just unpleasant looking, higher in all kinds of problems. And I've argued that the reason for this is that under harsh Darwinian conditions, we were essentially evolved, if I've looked at this in other videos, to be conservative and to be religious, and therefore that goes together with genetic health. And as the Darwinian conditions collapse from 80% child mortality to 1% child mortality, then we would expect most deviations from the norm to be in the direction of poor health, and therefore you would have liberalism, which would be a deviation from the norm, going hand in hand with genetic mental health, mental ill health, genetic physical ill health, and just general high mutational load. I don't want to have to run over that again, but to some extent, to a very small extent, you would expect maladaptations to be associated with extreme conservatism. We would be evolved to a modal, optimum level of conservatism. What does conservatism involve? Well, as opposed to liberalism, well, there's much debate over how you define this term, but basically it's reasonable to say, to reduce it to Jonathan Haidt's moral foundations, to say that we are all evolved to be pack animals and to therefore have group moral values, but to be individuals who compete for status within the group and thus to have individual moral values. The group moral values are obedience to authority, in-group loyalty, and high levels of sanctity and high levels of disgust. which then repels outsiders and so forth. Those are group-oriented values. Those are associated with conservatism. And then you have the individually-oriented values that are about your concern about yourself within the group. That is to say, harm avoidance, which avoids harm to you. So it's a way of getting more for you. And also equality, which is a way, if you are not at the top of the group, of getting more for you proportionately, and in a sense, moving up the hierarchy. Liberals are high only in the individually-oriented values. They are individualists, although they may play for status by making out that they're very concerned about the good of the group and whatever, and the good of the poor and the good of the disadvantaged. We know perfectly well that this is not the case. Being liberal correlates with being low in agreeableness, being low in conscientiousness, basically being a selfish person. So these are covert means, going on about equality, making yourself seem nice, going on about harm avoidance, making yourself seem nice. These are covert means of gaining individual status. Conservatives, although they don't seem to care about the poor little bunny oneies, actually they are higher in agreeableness, higher in conscientiousness and law following, and lower in mental instability. So they're basically kinder people. But overall, the Conservatives are high in all five moral values, and the Liberals are only high in the individualising moral values. They are low in the group-oriented moral values. Now, what that potentially means, of course, is that there is an optimum level of conservatism and very extreme conservatism, very, very extreme conservatism, that would also have been selected against under harsh Darwinian conditions. There would be an optimum level, for example, of disgust and of a feeling of disgust towards things. People that are high in conservatism tend to feel high levels of disgust towards outsiders, but also high levels of disgust towards sexual issues, high level of disgust towards all kinds of stuff. And this would be an optimum level. If you were too high in disgust, it would be crippling. If you were too high in group orientation, you wouldn't think of yourself and you'd end up getting killed. So there has to be some balance. And so you would expect a deviation in that direction also to be associated with physical and mental problems. Now, I've looked in my book, Spiteful Mutants, at how you get people who are on the extreme right, and this is associated with elements of neuroticism, let's say very strong negative feelings, and elements of also psychopathic personality, which has very strong negative feelings. And that would be consistent with the idea that the deviating too far from the conservative norm in a conservative direction would be a sign of mutational load. Now, I found a very interesting deviation, which was most unexpected, which is that there is a correlation between in women between conservatism and what's called vaginismus, and also what's called dyspareunia. These are serious medical concerns, and both of them correlate with extreme conservatism. The more conservative you are, the more likely you are to have vaginismus, and the more conservative you are, the more likely you are to have dyspareunia. Now, what is vaginismus? Vaginismus is the persistent or recurrent difficulties of a woman allowing the entry into her vagina of a penis, a finger, or any object at all. An attempt to put anything into her vagina, even a swab or something, a menstrual towel, anything like that, causes phobic avoidance, involuntary pelvic muscular constriction, and anticipation of fear and the experiencing pain and the actual experience of pain. These women seem to have no physical abnormalities in their vagina. So it's some sort of psychosomatic problem. That's vaginismus. Now, if you like, a sort of semi-vaginismus is what's called dyspareunia. And dyspareunia means that it's not so bad that the penis is basically unable to enter the vagina, but once it does enter, it's extremely painful for the woman, and sex causes tremendous pain. Somewhere between 0.5 and 1% of women suffer from vaginismus. Now, vaginismus also correlates with general mental instability. Women who are high in anxiety are more likely to have vaginismus. So this made me originally hypothesise, well, women that are higher in social anxiety are more likely perhaps to conform to the dominant religion. The dominant religion is wokeness, so there should be an association with being left-wing. On the other hand, one of the things that is associated with very high anxiety in more religious societies is actually being overtly religious, is being extrinsically religious. And this is associated of course, with right-wing and conservative. And similarly, people who are high in social anxiety, that can be considered a socially positive trait, and therefore we would expect it to be associated with a general slow life history strategy. And there is evidence that slow life history strategists, people that are high in agreeableness, people that are high in conscientiousness, people that are low in most aspects of mental instability, but who are high in social anxiety, those people are what we were selected for under harsh Darwinian conditions. Those people tend to be more religious. Those people tend to be more conservative. And so it could be the case that therefore an extreme manifestation of these traits could somehow cause you to be in some way anti-sex. Why? Well, as we know, under fast life history strategy conditions, you live fast, die young, you invest all of your energy in sex, and you invest very little in nurture or the good of the group or the good of other people. Therefore, you are highly sexed and you're going to have no problem with sex. As you move away from this into a harsher yet stable ecology, people have to compete with each other. You take energy away from sex, you invest the energy in nurture, and therefore you have more of an abhorrence of sex. You want to have fewer children and invest more energy in them. You want to make sure you have children with just the right person who will invest in you and your offspring so that you're more likely to survive, a person that won't pump and dump. You want to make sure that you're going to be looked after and all this. And so it makes sense to have more of an abhorrence for sex, to in a sense have more of a disgust for sex in general, and to only want to have sex with just the right person at just the right time in order to have a small number of children and have the resources to invest in them and make sure they can compete in this harsh yet stable ecology. So it would make more sense to be more sexually restricted, in a sense, the more of a slow life history strategist you are. And the research by J.D. Unwin in his book Sex and Culture shows that the more simplistic kind of societies are basically just highly sexualized and whatever. And as societies become more complex in harsher yet stable ecologies, they become basically more and more restrictive of sex, in a sense, more and more anti-sex. Until you get to the Victorians, where sexuality is taboo and it can't be talked about in polite society. And if we were doing this 150 years ago, people would be, I couldn't talk about sex openly like this. No way. It was a taboo subject. And that's a society that reflects, until relatively recently, being under a very harsh yet stable conditions of a cold period and all of this sort of thing. So you would expect, therefore, perhaps some sort of relationship between extreme conservatism, almost pathological, unhealthy conservatism, and basically having a very, very tight vagina, and a vagina becoming tight in response to the possibility of sex so that you can't have sex. And this is exactly what this study found. It used a small sample, but it was statistically significant differences were found in this, that you have basically conservative women, they have conservative moral values, they are less tolerant of sexual behaviour, they are more likely to say that things like oral sex or anal sex or whatever are disgusting, they have a lower threshold for negative feelings about sex, they become disgusted by sex more easily. They don't emphasize sex. They regard sex as something that is sinful, and they don't become aroused easily. They don't have much sexual desire, and they have a very high level of disgust in response to sexual stimulation. And this all makes sense because, as I say, if you are a slow life history strategist, sex should be something disgusting, and sex should be something rare, and sex should be something controlled, and it should be something sinful. Such that you only have sex with a very small number of men, that you are very careful who you have sex with, that you generally avoid having sex because what you want to do is invest all of your energy in nurture and in the raising of offspring and very little in sex. Now, this becomes pathological, of course, if your antipathy for sex is so extreme that you basically can't have children to nurture at all. And that's what you get with vaginismus and, to a lesser extent, with dyspareunia. You get this absolute extreme fear response to sex, which is just with a lot of these things that are problems that are medical difficulties, is basically, and it can be argued as a very extreme manifestation of something good. So conscientiousness is very useful in prehistory, in a highly cooperative environment that's needed to survive in a harsh yet stable environment. People are very high in impulse control and rule following. If you're too high in impulse control and rule following, then presumably you can't let go. You're so buttoned up and structured that you can't let go. And sex kind of involves letting go. And so you'll have difficulty with sex. Agreeableness. It's good to be agreeable. High in agreeableness, that's generally good in evolutionary terms in a harsh yet stable ecology. But if you're too high in agreeableness, then you'll just become a doormat for somebody else and you won't really think of yourself at all. You'll be sort of a co-narcissist. Well, that's no good either. That's basically maladaptive. Neuroticism, social anxiety. Social anxiety, good in a harsh yet stable ecology. Social anxiety, too high, you don't get anything done, you're too fearful, and whatever. Now, I think what we have here is that in general, sex is to be regarded as disgusting. It's something disgusting, and it's something, from a female perspective, it's something dangerous. It's something disgusting because it's inherently disgusting. You know, you're putting private parts next to each other and whatever, exchanging of bodily fluids. It is a vector. It is a means of catching disease. It is a means of catching medical problems from the other partner. It has something inherently disgusting in it. That's why children find it disgusting. Now, as you get older, of course, you develop a sex drive, and the sex drive overcomes the disgust response for sex. And that's why if a woman is, let's say, particularly disgusting, then even though you have a sex drive, you wouldn't touch that. No, that's just too disgusting. No way. The disgust response hits in. The sex is only not disgusting if a person has other components to her which are highly arousing: a beautiful face indicating good genes, secondary sexual characteristics that are attractive that indicate good genes, a mind perhaps that indicates good genes or useful genes, and then the disgust response of the sex act can be overcome. If a person is very, very, very high in disgust, which is what would be associated with conservatism, then you can see how this response might hit in. Similarly, if a person is very, very high in conscientiousness, the inability to let go, the fear of being vulnerable like that, the fear of breaking the rules, if you've been brought up to think of sex as something shameful or whatever, or just the fear of letting go that's involved in sex, then again, sex might induce some sort of fear and thus this kind of response. If you have a very low sex drive, which is what we would expect among conservative people, because they're evolved to a K ecology, they have the K traits in personality of agreeableness, low neuroticism and high conscientiousness, then you would expect them to have a low sex drive, and it would take the disgust response could overwhelm the sex drive more easily. And so I think that all of these things come together. And what was found with this study was that, as I say, it's the most conservative people, they're the ones that are having vaginismus. Those that are a bit less conservative, they're the ones that are having dyspareunia, which is that it's not as bad as vaginismus. And those that are liberal, they don't have these problems at all, because they are evolved basically to be sociosexual. They are individualists. They are evolved to a fast efficient strategy environment of pump and dump, live fast, die young, in which you actually evolve to put a lot of your energy into sex. So there's no reason why they would have any kind of negative response to sex. I read a case of a woman who didn't manage to actually have sex with a husband until she was 50. She married him when she was 25, and they finally had sex, proper sex, when she was 50 years old. She'd managed to have children between that time, though she'd had to have cesareans and things, but she had to have children because his semen quality was so strong that even though he wasn't fully in her when he ejaculated, some semen managed to get in squirted its way in, it's called a splash pregnancy, and she was able to get pregnant without him being fully in her vagina. But these are, of course, rarities. But it shows you that people say to me, oh, I'm just coming up with these concepts because, oh, I'm right wing or whatever, and I'm conservative, and I'm saying conservatives are brilliant and liberals are maladaptive. No, it's perfectly possible to be very extreme conservative, though, and for that to be associated with maladaptive traits. And an example of this is the relationship between conservatism and vaginismus. Well, I hope this is a bit of interest, and goodbye!
Hello, hello, hello! The Jolly Heretic is an online public house which meets on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, in which we discuss the kind of based, fearless science which is increasingly expunged from our woke, joke universities. If you would like to help the Jolly Heretic public house, and there are many ways you can do so, please, please, please become one of my patrons on Subscribestar. Also, if you want to, you can donate to the channel using Odyssey and Entropy, and you could also purchase Jolly Heretic merchandise, such as shirts and mugs. All of the links are in the description. Again, I'd be most violently grateful if you could assist the Jolly Hermit Public House. And I will see you all soon. And goodbye!